Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right. Welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Ells. I am joined in the dugout by Brian Svensson.
What up?
And on the phone, Chris Zook returns. How's it going, Chris?
I'm good. Let's go, boys.
Let's go. We got the full squad here, which cannot be said for the Dodgers starting rotation, 80% of which is currently on the DL with the return of Kershaw's back problems, sending him to the 10-day DL. Kenta Maeda, strained right hip. Hyunjin Ryu, pulled groin muscle. Rich Hill, finger blister. Alex Wood, meanwhile, hanging on, but has been dealing with hamstring cramps. So,
holy cow.
There could come a moment when all five of the opening day five-man rotation is on the DL at the same time.
I mean, they kind of knew about this, though, right? Like, when they started signing pitchers that had injury-prone issues, and a lot of them, the whole entire purpose was that they could just rotate guys in and off of the DL. I think it's a silly solution, but it's obviously working for them because they're getting great performance out of guys like Ross Stripling. So
we're going to talk Stripling. Zook, have you been watching any of those West Coast games?
I got to be honest, no, but I'll say this. I don't think I'm missing much. I will say this is a good time of year if you're a baseball fan. Stanley Cup just finished. The NBA Finals will finish tonight. And then baseball,
You're calling that one, are you?
Well, I don't think that's, you never bet against LeBron, but they're not going to win.
You're not calling a gentleman's sweep?
I would love to at least have one. That would be nice. No. I mean, the one thing is, yeah, I mean, it's exactly right. Like, they do have, Walker Buehler is there as well. So they're actually still getting some contribution from it. But it is a good time because then it becomes the focus is baseball. Now we're into the third month of the season. You're starting to see teams kind of play out a bit here. Yeah, the Dodgers, I mean, it's crazy, right? They were right there last year, and they're kind of piecemealing this together. But Kershaw's the big one, right? I mean, after all is said and done, I mean, he's the ace. He's your number one guy, and if he's not available for a long stretch here, I mean, the Dodgers are sunk.
This is, what, his fourth trip to the DL with back problems?
Yep, his fourth. And I mean...
And he's over 30.
I don't know how sunk the Dodgers actually are. Like, Ryu's about to come back sometime soon. Wood's been good. If Stripling maintains, if they manage to make a trade with some of their prospects and get a hold of literally any impact bat, they're right there with the Rockies and the Diamondbacks, both of which aren't exactly playing well.
I'm gonna say that the caveat is that division isn't going anywhere. So sure, they're gonna. I guess I'm thinking more about long term about making a run for a World Series.
That's
again,
fair,
right?
I can agree with that.
For me, like, that team is built to win now, right? They were there last year. And so, yes, I think what they're going to have to do is, yeah, you actually could maybe steal that division because it's not going anywhere. But that said, is are you going to go anywhere past that? Are you going to go anywhere past a wild card or a divisional round? What it is right now, like at the end of the day, you need an ace, right? Like Scherzer, we can talk a little bit about, you know, his immaculate inning he had. That is a guy who's been a workhorse who, you know, you need a front end still, even though Tampa Bay wants to run out relievers at a start of a game now. There's still something to be said about an ace being ahead of the, you know, the starting rotation.
Yeah, so the Dodgers with their win over Pittsburgh last night, sitting right at 500, a game and a half behind Arizona in the NL West. So, yeah, it's still anyone's division. And obviously, Arizona dealing with some injuries of their own. A.J. Pollock, obviously, on the DL, pretty much their best hitter so far this season.
Yep.
Paul Goldschmidt has struggled at the plate.
He's heating up.
He is warming up, which is a good sign for them. But, yeah, so getting back to Ross Stripling, and you mentioned Max Scherzer, the only pitcher close to Max Scherzer so far this season in terms of their percentiles, in terms of throwing strikes, first pitch strikes, strikeout to walk, XFIP, all the measures that Fangraphs like to pull. Ross Stripling is the next best pitcher to Max Scherzer so far this season. And in fact, when they look at top 20 months from 2002 to 2018, so obviously a lot of months and a lot of pitching performances over that 16-year period, Ross Stripling, his May 11th on the list. Now, 5 of those months, 5 of the top 10 is Clayton Kershaw. Over the course of several different years. But we've got Pedro Martinez in 2002, Alex Wood and Corey Kluber in 2017, Johan Santana all the way back in 2004, and Zach Greinke in 2009. So, I mean, that's a bit... Ross Stripling is a name that sticks out like a sore thumb.
Maybe. Well, I guess we'll see, right?
Or a sore back.
I guess we'll see in the future to see how well he does, because he's been so good that he's earned a spot in that rotation, even if it's healthy, right? Mm-hmm. He's been that good. He's throwing pitches for strikes. He's getting guys to swing at balls outside the zone. He's fooling them with his stuff. His whip has been incredibly good. He's not allowing home runs. The guy's just been on fire. Now, whether or not that's just a one prolonged hot streak, or whether or not this is actually who Ross Stripling really is and this is his coming out party, I don't know, but I'm anxious and curious to find out.
He has doubled his strikeout to walk ratio against lefties this year after increasing the velocity on his curveball.
Oh, that's interesting. Let
me say something about Ross Stripling. For fantasy, he's awesome. Because he's in a lot of leagues, he's an RPSP, which people love.
Yeah.
But let me say that, I've got his stats sort of his last starts here. Here's his last five, his Ks are 7, 9, 10, 9, 7. I would agree here. We're not too sure if this is an outlier. He's just on a hot heater right now, or if this is the real deal. But he is someone in fantasy everyone should be playing. And it's someone in the real world for the Dodgers who is at least, you know, not only an able body, but someone who actually is eating some innings, you know, being very productive. And no one, you know, would have saw this coming, I don't think, at the start of the year. So, I mean, maybe this is how the Dodgers piecemeal this together until Kershaw comes back, or they get at least some of the regulars, I guess, into the rotation.
It's funny you say no one saw this coming, because the Jeff Sullivan piece on Fangraphs about, it's called "So Ross Stripling is Great Now." Previously, in the last week or so, Sullivan's written about Max Muncy and Matt Kemp and the fact that these three are basically the reason the Dodgers are where they are right now. And Brian and I were talking off air before the show. It's like, if you had said, like, who are the top three, like, who's going to be the three most impactful Dodgers through June, I don't think you would have named any of those three guys.
Nope.
No.
Not at all. Not a chance. It would have been Kershaw, it would have been Bellinger, and it would have been either Turner or Jansen for me, and so it's just, this is crazy.
Well, talk about crazy. Did you guys read about Bellinger, that there was some thoughts about putting him back to the minors?
He had hit like garbage, though, up until that point. And
I totally agree, but isn't that just a crazy about how far it's flipped this year on this team, right?
Yeah.
It would have been unfathomable to think about that at the start of the year.
Well, I mean, it was kind of the same thing as Aaron Judge, right? Where like the kid hadn't hit for power in the minor leagues. Even Judge didn't really hit for all that much power in the minor leagues. And then they came up, had a hot half of the season, and then cooled off. So, you know, like the Stripling question, was it just a prolonged hot streak, or is that who that hitter really is? And for Judge, he's showing that, you know, he's really is that power guy. That power does really exist for him, but he's also going to strike out a lot. I think he struck out 8 times in a recent doubleheader that they had, which is like the first time that's ever happened to somebody ever. And with Bellinger, you know, there was a period of time where he hit .135 for an entire month with the Dodgers last year before really going on a heater, and he's not hit well this year. So, you know, is that who Bellinger really is? Is he just going to be a really streaky guy that when he catches hot is one of the best players in baseball, but when he's not is maybe almost DFA-able?
So it feels this is like an ESPN thing here to turn from the Dodgers to the AL East.
Oh yeah, the Yankees.
But you know, we got to cover both coasts here. But the Yankees, there's a lot of talk right now on a lot of the sites, Fangraphs included, about the Yankees needing to make a trade for a pitcher. That, you know, Luis Severino he can't do this alone. And so the Yankees have already been kind of linked to a lot of possible trade candidates, including some of your favorite Jays.
Oh, really? Jay Happ?
Stroman and Jay Happ.
Why would they trade for Stroman? Why would the Jays trade Stroman to them?
Discussion of Chris Archer, who is obviously not the ace we thought he was in Tampa Bay, but has shown a little more of late. But they have also talked about a Met. You coincidentally wearing
two of them.
Two of them, in fact. You're wearing a Pedro Mets jersey today there, Brian. So maybe you want to talk about the Mets pitchers since you're, you know.
Yeah, okay. So on WFAN in New York, they talked, there was reported that the Mets were looking to potentially trade DeGrom and Syndergaard if they continued, like if they're out of the playoff picture by the deadline, which is insane to me. But the return that you would get on either one of those pitchers is through the roof. And so if the Yankees were to go and try and get them, right, like at least one of those guys, it would help the Yankees immensely. We're talking about the same sort of impact that Justin Verlander had on the Astros last year. They'd have to give up a lot to get him, though. Probably Gleyber Torres plus.
And I don't know if the Yankees are willing to shop Gleyber.
I mean, if the return is Jacob DeGrom, you have to, right? Like, the answer is yes.
100%.
The answer is yes. Gleyber Torres is a very good player, and he's an impact bat, but he's still very young, and the Yankees have a team now that can win in a league that is in a spot for them to win. If you're looking at the division winners being them, Cleveland in potentially the worst division in baseball, and the Seattle Mariners, you got to do it. You have to do it. Like,
I totally agree with that. And the one thing the Yankees, actually, it's weird to say, but they actually have built themselves up where they can do this now because their system worked for a change, right? Instead of them just always getting free agents, they actually took that time the last 2 or 3 years to build up some assets where they can make a big move like that. I mean, Greg Bird could be out there as well if they want. I mean, there's a couple.
Andujar.
Yeah, Andujar, right? There's names.
Fraser.
I mean, look, there's 4 right there we've just named, right, that they, to be honest, are expendable. You're not talking about Judge, right? You're not talking about Sanchez. But any of those other 4, put them in a package deal, get DeGrom, my goodness, right? Like, all of a sudden now the Yankees become really the evil empire again.
Yeah, no, and as noted in a piece by Craig Edwards, you know, they have Neil Walker and Brendan Drury, who they brought in to fill those Gleyber and Miguel Andujar spots while those guys developed. So there are guys on the bench who can play those spots if they need to trade one of them in order to acquire DeGrom.
Tyler Austin as well plays a bunch of infield positions as well.
This is true.
They have a lot of guys that they can trade, and if I'm the Yankees, I'm doing whatever I can to get either DeGrom or Syndergaard. I would even consider a lot of trade options with some of those guys for Mad Bum too. He looked a little bit off in his last start. His changeup was nice and meatballish, but the rest of the, you know, he's going to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants are at 500 as well, tied with the Dodgers a game and a half behind Arizona, so they're still in it.
Yeah, they're not like the Mets.
But in a weird way, in it. They don't seem like they have necessarily the capacity to finish out the season.
The
like
moves that they made, though, make that they want to win now. So if they have the chance to win that division, they're going to go for it.
One team that has been conceivably seen as a spot, and of course also in the NL West, is the Padres, who have Tyson Ross or Jordan Lyles. Obviously not on the level of a DeGrom Syndergaard, but won't cost as much either.
Yeah, that's fair. I could see that.
So you were you were talking about the scuffling of the AL Central there. Cleveland still sitting atop.
Your Twins are still there, Mike.
My Twins are still in it. Speaking of scuffling,
are we pouring one out for Byron Buxton yet?
Yeah, we could. I mean, hope springs eternal as a Twins fan. I'm not ready to completely write him off. And he's still an amazing defender.
That's
who
fair.
Produces those fantastic fielding web gems.
A rich man's Kevin Pillar.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Who's never, so far as I know, said anything that required.
This is correct.
Remediation an apology. So
this is correct.
But yeah, so the Cleveland and Detroit, surprisingly, 30-34. So under 500, but four games back of Cleveland. It is a bit of a quagmire of a division. And then Seattle, like you said, this is a...
They're what, 19-5 since Robbie Cano's been suspended?
Yeah, and they're 19-11 on the road.
That's crazy.
They have a staggeringly large, basically...
Especially considering all three of us sat in here in this studio after Robbie Cano was suspended and basically wrote that team off.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so, they're basically at 600 on the road, at 667 on the road.
Maybe it's a rallying cry. We're going to do it without him, and maybe it was a distraction. Who knows about that? Can I throw one? I never heard of this. Maybe I'm missing something. I want to go back to Scherzer, who had this immaculate inning.
Right, sure.
So when did that become something? Do you know
the notion of an immaculate inning?
Well, when I saw the number, I think Nolan Ryan's on there, Sandy Koufax, Pedro, it was quite impressive, the list that's done. There's only, because it was his second one.
I have it here. The list of guys with multiple immaculate innings are Lefty Grove, Sandy Koufax, Nolan Ryan, Randy Johnson, and Max Scherzer.
They're crazy.
That's it.
Those are all Hall of Famers.
Yep.
Top of the line,
yep.
Top of the list. You can start your top 10 with any of those guys, right? I mean, are we talking about Max Scherzer has won three Cy Youngs. All he's missing really is the World Series here.
He's the best pitcher in baseball right now.
But it's great. But is this a new thing? When did we, because I never really heard about this too much until he did it. Maybe because it's been far and few between.
Well, in baseball, in Major League history, there's been 85 different Major League pitchers who've accomplished this.
Okay.
91 total immaculate innings. The first one, June 4th, 1889, John Clarkson of the Boston Bean Eaters.
Those don't count.
Against the Philadelphia Quakers. The list is very interesting because there's some, obvious ones like Oral Hershiser.
Sure.
Guys you'd expect. But then there's LaTroy Hawkins.
Really?
Wow.
Brad Boxberger and Rafael Soriano have each got.
Sure, I
can see relievers.
Pitcher, right,
yeah.
You're a reliever, and you just blow away. Is Mariano on there by any chance or anything like that? I'm just curious. I guess there must be the spectrum of amazing pictures to just one offs.
No Mariano.
Wow.
But you've got like Garrett Richards, Rex Brothers.
The list of guys with multiple though is pretty
unbelievable.
It's pretty unbelievable. In that game too, not only did he throw an immaculate inning, he only threw 99 pitches. 81 of them were strikes. So,
oh, come on.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's 80% strike.
That's insane. Like, he's the best pitcher in baseball right now, and he, you're right, he does not get nearly enough due for it.
Well, we were just talking with Kershaw at the start, right? And Kershaw is, I think we know him because he's been so longevity, but Scherzer has to be Kershaw, right? Like, in even more ways because he's more sustainable now, right? Because he's more durable.
He has not had the trips to the DL that the Kershaw has had, that's for sure.
Could you imagine how much the Tigers are kicking themselves, thinking that they at one point in time they had both Scherzer and Verlander and just decided they didn't want to pay either of them? Like,
and they had that pizza money. They could have ponied up.
Yeah, the pizza money. Absolutely, it's crazy.
But in one respect, Scherzer, I mean, as good as he was, has become elite now, right? Verlander was there, I think, at that point. Scherzer, they just, you know, did they want to make the risk? I remember back in the day, you know, people were like, is he worth this money and stuff? Oh, he's worth every dollar now, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's worth every dollar. Yep. Even they probably got a deal on what he's, as weird as that sounds. But it's just crazy sort of what he, and he's done it now in two leagues, right, which is very impressive. I mean, you know, I mean, Kershaw's been in Dodgers forever, but, you know, to do it in two different leagues at, and especially now what he's doing here, I just wanted to point that out because I just don't know if people understood just how crazy good that stat was.
It's insanity. He's currently on a 7-year, $210 million deal, which is $15 million per year, which is an insane discount if you consider that the current going rate for a single win above replacement is $10 million on the free agent market. $15 million is an absolute steal.
This is true. So we were talking about kind of crazy facts, and obviously the immaculate inning being one. The other one that I thought was interesting was Javi Baez and this crazy stat he's on pace to set the record for, which is the highest single season ratio of home runs to walks. He currently has more than double the amount of homers than he does walks this season, which would shatter the record set by Dante Bichette in 1995 of 1.82 when he had 40 home runs and 22 walks. This is like an unintentional honor.
Yeah, I mean, I tipped my cap to him last week for walking for the first time in 173 at-bats. The guy just, he doesn't know how to take a base on balls. It's hilarious. An incredibly gifted player that could be one of the five best players in baseball if he knew how to just lay off a pitch.
3% walk rate.
But that's baseball bit now, too. We mentioned that earlier in the year, right? I mean, everyone's just swinging for the fences, you know, not taking the pitches and, you know, working counts. But also, I have to admit, that is so baseball. That is such an amazing stat on the other end, right? I mean, it's sort of a dubious stat, but it's a great stat as well. I love that.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much, I mean, because this is the thing. The Major League Draft, it's kind of a weird one because it's several years away from kind of these people sniffing the majors usually, right?
Right.
This isn't like, you know, last year with Alvin Kamara being drafted by New Orleans and then becoming like one of the top running backs in the NFL.
Conn McDavid doing it in his first year.
But obviously the Major League Draft has been going on, and some interesting stats, including the fact that Biff Tannen's son, I don't know if you heard about this, but
the guy who played
Biff Tannen in the Back to the Future series, his son was drafted this week. The Mets, now I'm trying to pull up, they took him with the 560th pick of the MLB draft in the 19th round.
So many picks.
Cal State Fullerton's Tommy Wilson. And yeah, this is the other thing. It's just such a like huge amount of players that it's kind of
ridiculous.
You
have to, though. You have to because of how many farm teams you have, right? That like,
but the weird thing about this is MLB is trying to make this a bigger deal. They're, you know, putting on their network, you know, the first round and stuff like that. But it's exactly right. Other than, I believe, you know, when it was Harper, Strasburg, right? You know, your money number one guy that everyone knows is a lock. there's been number one guys who have never panned out, right? Like, it's not like the NBA or NHL or even the NFL to that extent where, you know, that first round can make and break a franchise. We're talking about some of these guys could be 4 or 5 years away. They might never play in the major leagues, right? So it's such an interesting one because they're trying to make it a bigger deal, MLB. But I think unless you have a blue chipper, I don't know if it's ever going to be like that. That's why they have so many rounds, because they got to fill all those minor leagues. And baseball is very unique. It's very different. That it usually takes 3 to 5 years for these guys to pan out. You know, a lot of these guys being drafted very young in their career. So, but yeah, I did not know about Biff because it was so far down the list.
Yeah, it was just one of those ones where I think it was maybe cut for the MLB sort of like fun side of things that, you know, especially because the kid looks so much like his dad, and the age he's at now is about kind of the age his dad was at from the first Back to the Future movie. So, and they've got some great gifs of his dad cheering for him at the Cal State Fullerton games. One other draft pick that I thought was interesting, and I heard it talked about on the MLB Ringer podcast this week, was Kyler Murray, who was selected 9th overall by the Oakland Athletics.
Dual sport athlete.
I don't know if you've heard this story, but
he's the quarterback for Oklahoma.
Yes. And so,
bit of a reach.
This was the thing. There was a thought that maybe end of the first round, beginning of the second round, in terms of like his just raw ability. But the fact that he is playing football and had, you know, indicated that he wanted to continue playing football for Oklahoma and starting for the Sooners. This is the successor to Baker Mayfield, and he's gonna play a sport where people are running at him and trying to hurt him, you know, every play. And so, you know, what is this for the Oakland Athletics to make this pick and this early? The one rationale that I heard that I thought was very believable is, you know, there's a hard cap on how much you can spend on rookie signing bonuses. And the thought that if they
picked a guy that wasn't going to play,
they can redistribute that money to some of their later picks and you know, work the system in some way. And this is a very Oakland
Moneyball
kind of thing.
No, that makes sense. Yep. I can totally see that. I mean, that or they just think that the guy, they can lure the guy in, right? Like one of the two.
Or he just might not be a good football player.
Entirely possible.
Hard to say. We're not too sure about that, right? I mean, you know, it's happened before dual players get drafted baseball, and they sometimes play in baseball. And Danny Ainge was back in the day, way back, he was a double drafty, and he played basketball instead, right? So it can happen there. I mean, again, I don't think it's such a reach as in other sports. I don't know if it's really a waste of a pick because a lot of these guys are never going to play in the major leagues anyways.
This is the thing, and this gives Oakland a few more kicks at the can in terms of some of those later picks. And conceivably, you know, like if you're just going on raw talent, you know, this guy, he struggled in the Cape Cod League, but, you know, played well in the NCAA, and is, you know, he's super quick. Like the one game that he did replace Baker Mayfield for when he was suspended, you know, his first drive, he ran for like 78 yards and did it very quickly. Like basically just completely surprised the defense. The guy has got wheels, and that's always a skill that you want.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, just look, the Giants used Jeff Samardzija as a pinch runner a lot because he was an all-world track sprinter. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we as we announced last week, we're down to a half hour for the next little while as we head towards Folkfest and Festival Express. Terry Stevens will be talking to Jada Kelly in just a few minutes. That does it for this edition of the Bench Jockeys. Chris, thanks for joining us by phone. Thanks to listening in and joining us on the radio. We will be back next week at 11 a.m.